Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I was asleep when I found myself covered in rubble. The rocket hit. It came through the second floor. We came out to help people and the martyrs.
Israel bombs a UN school sheltering displaced Palestinians in central Gaza, killing at least 40 people. We'll speak with an UNRWA spokesperson. Then, Where Olive Trees Weep, a new film on Palestinian life under Israeli occupation.
I'm not pro-Palestinian, but I'm pro-truth. And the truth is, the Palestinians have been oppressed and suppressed and murdered and controlled and dispossessed for decades. That's just the truth. There's no post-traumatic stress disorder here because the trauma is never post.
We'll be joined by the acclaimed Canadian physician and author, Dr. Gabor Maté, and by Palestinian journalist and trauma healer, Ashira Darwish. Then, as the New York primary approaches, we'll speak with New York Representative Jamal Bowman. Some are calling him the most endangered Democratic Congress member in America.
Are we in a police state, or is this a democracy?
The gentleman's time has expired.
We must stand with our young people and demand justice and freedom.
The gentleman's time has expired.
And everyone in this world.
AIPAC, the powerful Israel lobby group, has spent $25 million to defeat the progressive black congressman. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Gaza, an Israeli attack on an UNRWA school and shelter has killed at least 40 Palestinians overnight, including 14 children in the Nusayrat refugee camp. Dozens of people were injured in the attack. The school was being used to house displaced Palestinians. One survivor said he'd sought refuge at the school after being displaced first from Gaza City, then Khan Yunis, and then Rafah. Survivors described the school as being shelled with a belt of fire.
We were sleeping when we suddenly saw a rocket falling on us. On the second floor, there were martyrs, and on the first floor, there were injured. That's all we saw. Only God can help us. I was asleep when I found myself covered in rubble. The rocket hit. It came through the second floor. We came out to help people and the martyrs.
An Al Jazeera reporter at the scene said a number of women, children, and the elderly were among the victims. Israel claimed members of Hamas were at the UN school, but provided no evidence to back this up. In other news from Gaza, the UN Food Agency has issued a dire warning stating, quote, over 1 million people, half the population of Gaza, are expected to face death and starvation by mid-July, unquote, if Israel's war on Gaza does not end. The warning comes in a new report on global hunger that also says the risk of starvation persists in Sudan, Haiti, Mali, and South Sudan. Meanwhile, UNICEF says 90% of children in Gaza lack the nutrition needed for proper growth. Karen Huster, a medical advisor with Doctors Without Borders in Gaza, said there's been a, quote, insane escalation of hostilities across the Gaza Strip over the last 2 days.
We have seen hospitals being bombed. We have seen refugee camps being bombed. We have seen humanitarian warehouses being bombed. The situation is apocalyptic. This morning, on my way to the hospital, I saw two donkeys carrying the bodies of at least 8 people who had died in the hostilities of the last night. When we arrived, the emergency room was completely packed. There were families screaming. There was a man screaming for his family that had died.
In occupied East Jerusalem, mobs of far-right Israelis attacked Palestinians and several journalists, including Saif al-Kawasmi, on Wednesday during the Jerusalem Day flag march to mark the anniversary of Israel's seizing of East Jerusalem, the West Bank, and Gaza in 1967. In Palestine, June 5th is known as the Naksa, meaning setback. During Wednesday's march, Israelis were heard chanting, "Death to Arabs and may your village burn." Police reported making 18 arrests. Israel's announced it's shutting down a desert prison camp where Palestinian prisoners from Gaza say they were routinely beaten and tortured. Last month, three Israeli whistleblowers who worked at Sadi Tayman spoke to CNN. One whistleblower shared photographs that showed Palestinians being strapped down, blindfolded, and held in diapers at the site. Some prisoners had limbs amputated due to injuries sustained from constant tight handcuffing. Spain's announced plans to join South Africa's genocide case against Israel at the International Court of Justice. Spain joins other countries, including Colombia, Mexico, Egypt, Turkey, who have requested to join South Africa's case. Meanwhile, President Biden and leaders of 16 other nations have just issued a joint statement supporting the ceasefire and hostage deal that Biden outlined last week. In California, Stanford University says it's suspending 13 students who were arrested Wednesday after they briefly occupied the office of the president. The student activists are accused of injuring a law enforcement officer and causing extensive damage to Stanford property. Students are demanding Stanford disclose and divest their investments in Israel. Here in New York, U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres gave a major speech on the climate crisis Wednesday, as data confirmed last month was the hottest May on record, putting the Earth on a 12-month streak of record-breaking temperatures. Speaking at the American Museum of Natural History, Guterres said the world, quote, needs an exit ramp off the highway to climate hell, and called for a global ban on fossil fuel advertising.
We must directly confront those in the fossil fuel industry who have shown relentless zeal for obstructing progress over decades. Billions of dollars have been thrown at distorting the truth, deceiving the public, and sowing doubt. Many in the fossil fuel industry have shamelessly greenwashed, even as they have sought to delay climate action with lobbying, legal threats, and massive ad campaigns. And they have been aided and abetted by advertising and PR companies.
The World Meteorological Organization said Wednesday there's an 80% chance the average global temperature will exceed 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels for at least one of the next 5 years. But Guterres says that the world can still meet the 1.5 degree target if governments drastically speed up the phase out of fossil fuels. In Ecuador, indigenous and environmental activists demonstrated against state-run oil company Petroecuador Wednesday after it failed to comply with a court order to shut down gas flares in the Amazon. The flares burn off gas created during oil production. This is indigenous activist Nancy Pelatuña.
There's groups that are at the brink of extermination. Polluted rivers and polluted water sources that affect city folk as well. It's not an isolated reality. If the Amazon is destroyed, then it will affect all of the Ecuadorian people.
Amnesty International, Greenpeace, and Amazon Watch are among 50 groups urging President Biden to pardon human rights lawyer Stephen Donziger, who was targeted for prosecution by Chevron after he successfully sued the oil giant on behalf of 30,000 Amazonian indigenous in Ecuador whose land was devastated from oil spills. The director of Amazon Watch said, quote, a pardon will send a clear message that corporations cannot misuse the judicial system to criminalize human rights defenders, unquote. The European Union election is kicking off as voters in the 27 member nations select its new parliament between today and Sunday. Immigrant rights advocates fear expected gains from the far right could worsen the situation for asylum seekers, thousands of whom attempt the treacherous journey to Europe each month via the Mediterranean Sea. Also at the top of voters' concerns are the climate emergency and the economy. In media news, the New York Times has revealed the new chief executive of the Washington Post, Will Lewis, clashed with the paper's executive editor, Sally Busby, last month over her decision to publish an article about his connection to a major phone hacking scandal at Rupert Murdoch's News of the World newspaper in Britain. Busby resigned from the paper on Sunday, weeks after the clash. The New York Times reports other factors in her resignation included a plan by Lewis to reorganize the Washington Post newsroom and essentially demote her. Politico has described Lewis's new plan for the paper as the Rupert Murdochization of the Washington Post. In Arizona, rights groups are condemning Republican lawmakers for voting to place an anti-immigrant initiative on the November ballot. If passed, the measure would allow local law enforcement to arrest people suspected of crossing the border without authorization and empower state judges to order deportations. The group Lucha Arizona is suing the state over the proposal. Democratic State Representative Annalise Ortiz spoke out on the Arizona House floor earlier this week.
Under HCR 2060, my brown skin could be the cause for an Arizona police officer to pull me over, arrest, and detain me on suspicion that I don't belong in the state where I was born and raised. My community has lived in fear under SB 1070, and the provisions in HCR 2060 will instill that same fear, especially for our children who have parents who are undocumented.
And Senate Republicans voted down a bill that would establish federal protections for access to contraception. Republican Senators Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski backed the measure alongside Democrats, but the 51-39 vote fell short of the 60 votes needed to overcome a filibuster. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. An Israeli airstrike on a school sheltering displaced Palestinians in the Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza has killed at least 40 people, including 14 children, according to the government media office in Gaza. Nearly 80 Palestinians were also wounded in the pre-dawn strike on the Al-Sardi school, which is run by the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, known by its acronym UNRWA. The Israeli military claimed it targeted Hamas militants operating in the school, but provided no evidence to back up its claim. UNRWA schools across Gaza have functioned as shelters for displaced Palestinians since the start of Israel's war on Gaza. Last week, Israeli airstrikes hit close to an UNRWA facility in the southern city of Raqqa, where tens of thousands had sought shelter, setting tents ablaze and killing at least 45 people. Over 36,600 people have been killed in Israeli military air attacks in Gaza over the past 8 months, with over 83,300 injured. For more, we're joined by UNRWA spokesperson Tamara Al-Rafai. She joins us from Amman, Jordan. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Tamara. Can you explain what happened at about 1:30 in the morning Gaza time?
Yes. Hi, Amy, and thank you so much for giving UNRWA always a space and a platform on Democracy Now! What we understood from our colleagues in Gaza, given how patchy telecommunication is that indeed an Israeli strike hit one of our shelters. Originally, this was a school, but since the beginning of the war, this school in Nusayrat, in the middle part of Gaza, like many schools across the Gaza Strip, have housed people who have been repeatedly displaced as the conflict in Gaza evolved, evicting them and forcing them to leave their homes, leave loved ones, and leave their things behind. The strike happened around 2 a.m., and from what we understand, there are between 35 and 45 people killed. Many of them are children. We also remind that this being an UNRWA shelter, up to 6,000 people had sought refuge and safety inside that school, just like many, many other displaced people of the 2 million population of Gaza have been seeking a safe haven, but it hasn't been safe inside UNRWA shelters. I say that it's not safe because More than 170 UNRWA buildings, most of them serving as shelters, have been hit since the beginning of the war, killing more than 450 people. And by the way, we have lost, UNRWA has lost so far, 193 of my colleagues, all of them killed since the beginning of this war.
I wanted to go to a post on social media where Israeli military spokesperson Peter Lerner said Israel intentionally targeted the school and wrote, quote, "We assessed that 20 to 30 terrorists were in the compound at the time of the strike. We targeted precision strikes on the specific classrooms. What were the terrorists doing in a UN school? The compound was used for staging attacks and as a forward operating base," end quote. Your response, Tamara?
We had 6,000 people who had been displaced several times since the war started in October, sheltering in our schools. Most of them, more than half of them, were women and children. We've been hearing about precision strikes and about reports that some of the UNRWA or UN installations have been used by Palestinian armed groups. We hear about this every time a strike kills scores of civilians in or near our buildings. International law is clear. International humanitarian law calls for the protection of civilians, of people, of women, of children. During this conflict, the UN has paid the highest toll ever in such a short period. 8 months is not short, but 193 UNRWA staff killed and 450 people in our shelters is huge.
And what happened in Rafah last week with the Israeli airstrike that the Israeli military did not deny that led to the deaths of 45, at least, Palestinians who were in this tent camp who had fled there because they were told that this area would be safe?
Exactly what you're saying, Amy. Since the beginning of this war, Gazans have been issued what the Israeli government calls evacuation orders. In reality, these are orders for forced displacement. So the sea of people in Gaza has moved since the beginning of the conflict from the north of the Gaza Strip or Gaza City to the middle areas, Khan Yunis, Deir el-Balah and Khan Yunis. And then they were forced to move again in the direction of the conflict, Rafah, where people were told that they would be safe. Until last month, Rafah housed 1.5 million people, all of them displaced several times, and all of them were told that if you go to Rafah, you would be safe. Then, as of the 6th of May, the Israeli government decided on a ground invasion of Rafah, therefore pushing people to move again. Many of them had nowhere left to go. The tents became very, very rare in Rafah. No one had personal belongings, but mostly there was nowhere safe because strikes continues, aerial bombing continued. So there was nowhere safe. There still is nowhere safe. And what happened to these people in the tent is apocalyptic, like my colleagues from MSF say, and a reminder that nowhere is safe in Gaza.
The issue of hunger. The UN World Food Program has issued a dire warning stating, quote, over 1 million people, half the population of Gaza, are expected to face death and starvation by mid-July if the war doesn't end. If you can talk about what UNRWA has been able to do in helping to relieve the suffering, given how many countries have pulled out of funding of UNRWA because Israel said that UNRWA, some of the workers had been tied to the October 7th attack, though not presenting any evidence, leading to a number of countries restoring funding to UNRWA, though the U.S. hasn't.
So let's start with the good news. All of the 16 countries that has suspended funding resumed funding to UNRWA except the U.S. and the U.K. The U.S. and the U.K., though, are big donors to UNRWA, so that leaves us with a huge funding gap. Having said that, we've been receiving a lot of support from private individuals, private foundations, celebrities, in a sign of acknowledgement to the irreplaceable role that UNRWA has been playing since the beginning of the conflict. UNRWA is the largest humanitarian operation. We also cooperate very closely with other UN agencies, particularly the World Food Program, on distributing food. The distribution of food, of wheat flour, of clean drinking water has not stopped since the beginning of the war, despite extremely challenging humanitarian circumstances that include very, very patchy opening of the crossings, the land crossings, whether it's Rafah from the Egyptian side or Kerem Abu Salem, Kerem Shalom from the side of Israel. Land crossings are the safest and the fastest ways to get aid into the Gaza Strip. We've all been discussing for the longest time how many trucks a day have gone in. I want to say that the last month has been awful. Most of the days in May have seen zero trucks going in for the UN. And on the best day, we've seen 77 trucks. 77 trucks with food, non-food, mattresses, tents, clean water, medicines, medical supplies for a population of nearly 2 million people, or a bit over 2 million, completely under siege since the latest military operation started in May. So yes, UNRWA has long warned from a malnutrition and an imminent famine. UNICEF just recently said that 9 out of 10 children in Gaza fall way below their needed calorie intake daily. And now, with the scorching heat of nearly 90 degrees Fahrenheit in Gaza, lack of clean drinking water, we have started to see infants dying of dehydration.
Finally, this breaking news, the United States and 16 other countries calling on Israel and Hamas to accept the latest ceasefire hostage deal. Not clear exactly what the details are. What would this mean in Gaza right now?
A ceasefire is what everyone in Gaza needs right now, just to take a breath and have some respite. But in addition to the ceasefire, there has to be a much increased flow of humanitarian assistance going in, and there has to be a plan to resume some sense of normality in the Gaza Strip, particularly for traumatized children. And for that, a resumption of any kind of learning will help the children not only lag behind, but it will also help restore some kind of mental well-being. A ceasefire is what everyone needs in Gaza now.
Tamara Arafai, we want to thank you for being with us, spokesperson for UNRWA, the United Nations Agency for Palestine Refugees, speaking to us from Amman, Jordan. Next up, Where Olive Trees Weep, a new film on Palestinian life under Israeli occupation. We'll be joined by the acclaimed Canadian physician, Dr. Gabor Mate, and by Palestinian journalist and trauma healer, Ashira Darwish. Stay with us. One of the songs in the film Where Olive Trees Weep. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We turn now to that new film that explores the struggle of the Palestinian people under Israeli occupation through themes of loss, trauma, and the fight for justice. It's called Where Olive Trees Weep. Features people like renowned trauma doctor Gabor Mate, Israeli journalist Amira Haas, Palestinian activist Ahed Tamimi, and Palestinian journalist and therapist Ashira Darwish. This is the trailer.
I heard the stories of the pains of how people were tortured in these places. I never believed it until I saw. when I saw, I couldn't unsee it.
It's so important for people to understand colonization in order to understand what's happening in the world. And here in Palestine, you know, it's happening now.
So how does the world completely turn a blind eye to the Israeli continuous violence and sees Israel as the victim? This is the big question. I would see it and still get surprised every single time that how could this soldier just shoot me? We're so dehumanized to the point where they can come and they can exterminate you because to them, you're nothing but a rat.
I'm not pro-Palestinian, but I'm pro-truth. And the truth is, the Palestinians have been oppressed and suppressed and murdered and controlled and dispossessed for decades. That's just the truth. There's no post-traumatic stress disorder here because the trauma is never post.
فلتتجلى فيك روحي فلتتجلى فيك سمائي فلتتجلى يا إلهي فلتتجلى فلتتجلى فلتتجلى.
Your brother and your sister being in chains will not make this experience on earth acceptable. Your chains will be still held by my chains. And unless I am free, you won't be free.
The trailer of the film Where Olive Trees Weep that premieres today, that last voice, the voice of Ashira Darwish, Palestinian journalist and trauma healer. She's joining us from Newton, Massachusetts. She previously worked as a journalist and as a researcher for the BBC, for Human Rights Watch, and Amnesty International. And we're joined by acclaimed Canadian physician and author, Dr. Gabor Maté, who's also featured in the film. He is a Holocaust survivor, Order of Canada recipient, and a Hungarian-Canadian retired physician known for his work on trauma, addiction, and childhood development. The internationally best-selling author of 5 books published in 40 languages on 6 continents. His most recent visit to the West Bank was in 2022 when he led a healing workshop for Palestinian women who'd been imprisoned in Israeli jails. He's joining us from Provence, France. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! I'm wondering how you each got involved with this film. And also, Ashira, as a journalist and a therapist, your response to the latest footage showing young men attacking and surrounding a Palestinian journalist named Saif al-Kawasmi, attacked on duty, beaten on the head, a video. Haaretz journalist Nir Hassan also said attacked by a group of Israeli nationalist youth and posted video showing the violent scenes. What's going on right now in the West Bank, which this film, Where Olive Trees Weep, focuses on?
Good morning, Amy. I'm glad to be here with you from the Shamlut land. What's happening in Palestine is devastating, and what's happening in the West Bank and Gaza has been going on for 75 years. What happened to the journalists is not something new. This happens every single day. It just caught the cameras this time. We have hundreds of journalists incarcerated in Israeli prisons. And my friends and colleagues who were attacked in Jerusalem, and I know them personally, and it's just horrific to watch them getting beaten. But this is the reality every single march in Jerusalem where the Israelis take over the streets and they harass, terrorize the population there. And they are, of course, not friendly to the journalists because they don't want anyone filming them as they chant death to the Arabs and as they attack the Palestinians. Every day on this day, for a Jerusalemite like me, I would walk to the streets of Jerusalem just to say that we are here and this is our right to be here. And we get attacked and we get fought back and we have the army supporting these settlers as they march in our streets attacking us. And we basically get put on lockdown. We're not allowed to walk in our streets. Our shops are all closed. It's just basic terror on this day in Jerusalem. But to be honest, it has been like this since before 7 October. Jerusalem has become a city of ghosts. Armed soldiers have closed down the main entrance of Damascus Gate. Our streets have become death traps. Going to Al-Aqsa Mosque is one of the most spiritual, but also for me as a child, I grew up next to Al-Aqsa Mosque. It's my playground. Not being able to walk there, every time that we walk, is we're always in fear of soldiers that are walking, and they're just waiting for you just to make a smile at some point, if just to be caught, strip searched, stood on the walls. And it's just becoming more and more terrifying to be there.
In the film, Ashita, you describe your own experience being beaten and arrested.